Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Blood Sprayer Radio. I'm Jeff Konopka.
And I'm Christy Jett.
Sorry, we're laughing about some stuff, but we'll get into that in a bit. But thanks for tuning in again. Hopefully this isn't the first time that you've heard us. We're actually based out of Rochester, New York, and both of us write for the Blood Sprayer. So if you haven't checked out the website at bloodsprayer.com, you should go there and read stuff because there's lots of cool stuff on there. So as far as tonight goes, we are actually very honored to have a special guest joining us in about a half an hour or so.
You mean in about 15 minutes?
Yeah, somewhere in there. And that would be none other than Mr. Alex Winter, who is currently working on the Gate remake in 3D with my hands doing
they
stuff.
They didn't see your air quotes.
Yeah.
He, of course, is also the star of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. He's Bill S. Preston Esquire, the blonde one for those who don't know the difference between him and Keanu. He also wrote, directed, and starred in a great film called Freaked. He was Ricky Coogan. And for those of you who are a huge Lost Boys nerd, he played Marco in The Lost Boys. So he's got a lot of stuff under his belt. He's been working on a lot of stuff over the past years, and we are going to talk about the Gate remake. But before then, we wanted to talk about something that is what I was actually laughing about when we got on, and I will let Jeff start this out.
Well, we decided instead of, we're going to kind of skip over the news part for the show, go right into the reviews, and as most of you know, last night, Paranormal Activity 2 opened up, or as Christy is probably calling it, Paranormal Craptivity 2.
It just opened last night?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
It just opened last night.
I thought it's been out for like a week or something.
No.
Shit.
Well, everybody's been talking about it because they had some midnight screenings on Wednesday for special towns who demanded it.
Ooh.
Which, yeah, like we couldn't tell that it was going to be like Los Angeles and Toronto and New York City, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Of course they're going to have it. But anyway, so we're going to talk a little bit about that because both Christy and I saw the movie.
And both of us have completely different opinions on it. So I'll let Jeff go first so you can hear the positive bullshit.
Well, I'm not really going to say it would be positive bullshit. I think that it's more of if you like the first movie, if you watched Paranormal Activity and it creeped you out or you enjoyed it, you're probably going to like this one. Maybe even a little bit more than the first one. But if you didn't like the first one, then you're going to hate this one. You're going to completely hate this, as Christy will explain to you. But personally, for me, I thought that it was better than I was expecting. I was expecting some normal, like, Hollywood knockoff crap where they were just going to take it and kind of turn it into some big, like, Hollywood-type movie and take it away from the roots where it was. And to be honest, it's really just more of the same. I'm not going to lie. It's almost beat for beat like the first one. Everything happens in a certain order. Of course, it's a different family, kind of, because it's people that are related to people that are in the first one. I don't want to say too much about that because if you actually want to see this movie or if you actually like the first one,
I'm going to spoil the shit out of it. So
okay.
Go ahead.
Well, all right. Well, the basic premise is that it happens, most of the movie anyway, happens before the first Paranormal Activity, and it's Katie's sister's family who just had a baby, and there's some freaky shit going on in their house, and then it kind of ties up with the first one and then takes a step beyond it. So if you're really up for what Christy would consider to be torture, you could probably take these two movies and edit them down into one giant 3-hour long video camera movie.
Smorgasbord.
But the thing is again, like I said, it's really, this is one of those movies that people are either gonna, they're really gonna, they're gonna like it, or they're going to hate it. I don't necessarily love it. I think it was better than I expected. I had a good time in the movie theater, but I think part of that was just because I saw it, and I think like 75% of the crowd that was in the theater was from the ghetto. So we straight up just had people like two seats over just hollering out the most random stuff that you would ever hear in a movie theater, and it made the film a special experience for me. But I'm kind of one of those people who gets really creeped out by noises and dark and being
like
home
cat
alone.
Meowing?
Yeah. I hope that no one can hear that, but my cat Church is at the door. She wants in, but I'm not going
to
let her in.
Because she buried her in a pet cemetery, and now she's going to come back and kill you. Sorry. I had to. You named your cat after that cat, so why wouldn't I bring that up right now?
That's all right.
My turn?
Yeah, I guess we could.
No, you can say anything else you want
I don't have much else to say except for, again, like, if you enjoyed the first one, then you'll probably like this. And the reason that I actually liked it was because the first one did creep me out. But, again, that's because I'm kind of a wuss when it comes to hanging out in my basement at night in the dark. It's funny because I can watch all sorts of movies that have all sorts of, you know, people getting heads ripped off, all sorts of people raping babies and stuff, and it doesn't bother me. But yet, if I'm sitting at home alone and I hear noises in the garage, I don't like it. I don't know.
Baby rape, garage noises. Take your pick.
Kind of the same thing, though, if you think about it.
Okay, so Paranormal Activity 2. I hated the first movie. In fact, the only thing that was even remotely interesting about the first one was the chest on the girl. Like, that was pretty amazing. But my friends who I was there with, I mean, we just laughed through the whole movie. It was horrible. And I felt so gypped. It felt like a total, I mean, of course it was a marketing ploy when they're like, demand this movie to get it in your town. And it's like, you already knew you could just release the motherfucking thing, and you would have had all these people going to pay all this money, but it was like a farce. I was like, I felt stupid that I actually went on the website and hit, I need this film in Rochester. I felt like an asshole after the fact.
Did you say it just like that when you clicked it?
I did. I was like,
that's
I want
awesome.
This movie here. But, so I had no plans to see the second one. I really wasn't going to. And then the other night, I went with my best friend to see Jackass 3D, which is a far more rewarding film. I didn't feel like I wasted my money on that. And as I was walking out, a friend of mine who works at the theater there said, hey, if you want to see Paranormal Activity 2, it's on me totally. And I'm like, really? All right, I'll try this out. So I ended up seeing it alone in the theater full of teenagers. I mean, literally, I think there were maybe a couple of adults there, possibly. And it was so disheartening because all of these kids, oh, my God, every single jump scare, it took them 5 minutes to calm down from. They just thought it was so frightening, and oh, my God. And to be honest, I thought the plot was so forced. Oh, my God, let's come up with this whole backstory about the first one, blah, blah, blah. And I guess I'm not going to spoil it as much as I thought I was. Because I'm like, oh, yeah, the backstory. No, but they just made this whole backstory that was so far-fetched and stupid in so many situations where it's like, do you really think that people will be sitting there having these conversations on camera? It's not the Blair Witch Project. It's a different situation. These people sitting around their house, I think I'll just record us saying this really highly personal stuff we don't want anybody to hear. Do you remember when we were kids? And like, you know, oh, it feels just like that. I don't care. Go let the demon kill you. You're retarded. So anyway,
I still wish that the demon would just have ripped her shirt off.
Because, it would have been more rewarding.
Because I'm telling you, all through the first movie, all I could do was like see her boobs every time. Because they look like they were going to pop out.
The girl what's her?
Katie Featherston.
Yeah, Katie. She is a horrible actress. Anybody who believes her in either of those movies, you need a sobriety check, Jeff. No, I'm kidding. Other people, though. Actually, the other night on Facebook, I posted my review of Paranormal Activity 2. I was like, it was a piece of shit. And, like, it started a big debate with, like, two people who love that movie. And I promptly was like, I don't need those people in my life anymore, and deleted them.
See, the thing is, though, is you can't convince somebody that movie is good. It's really a personal thing. Like, it's not something like where you can convince them of some sort of artistic merit of
yeah.
It works on such a low level that either it does something for you or it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The only thing that I have ever argued with anybody about that is just that, especially with the first one, at least it was something original, and at least it was something that got put out that we had so that it wasn't just, like, the only movie that was out there was, like, Saw 6 or something.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I would have liked it more in both movies if it would have just stayed more of a supernatural thing, not so much the demonic bullshit, you know what I mean? Like, in the first one, that Ouija board shit, that was bad. That was so stupid. And then the ending was 10 times worse.
It's better than the original ending. I don't know if you've seen it.
I saw both endings, and I didn't like either of them.
They were both terrible, but the one was, like, the original ending just, like, of the first movie just drags out for, like, 6 minutes.
Yeah.
And, like, I've still had people tell me that they thought that one was much more rewarding, and I'm just like, how? Like, it's her sitting on the floor for 6 minutes.
The funny thing is, too, and I was telling you this about the sequel, it got to be, you know, towards this part where, you know, okay, I guess I won't spoil it as much as I thought I would, but you find out, okay, so this is how the original, you know, girl from the first movie, this is how she got possessed, and they bring the movie back to clips from the first one, and it shows the guy and the girl, and they have their new camera and whatever. I actually left the theater because I thought the movie was over. I was like, oh, wow, they took us back to a logical conclusion point. I'm out. And just as other things happened after that, I don't think it would have changed my mind. I still thought the movie was possessed.
It wouldn't have changed my mind.
No, and the thing is, once again, I was saying to Jeff before we got on, I left the theater so sad. I was on the phone with my friend on the way home, and I kept saying, I was like, is this really the future of horror? These fans that are in this theater that only watch mainstream bullshit? Like, I was in the theater to see Let Me In. There were, like, 10 people there. I was in the theater to see Splice. There were, like, maybe 6 or 10 people there. And those are films that hit me on a hell of a lot deeper level. But then Paranormal Activity, you get, like, 100 people in a theater all so freaked out. I was so sad and disheartened. And then today, and I'm only going to touch on it for a second, I ended up going to a film festival in Buffalo, which is like an hour from Rochester, and my spirits were raised tenfold by the movies that I saw today. I saw 4 independent films. 3 of them were awesome. One of them sucked so much ass, I don't even want to say the name. But I saw 3 films. I saw one out of Canada, which was called Werewolf Fever. And hopefully, we're gonna see if we can get the director on our podcast within the next few weeks, because Jeff has already been in contact with him. So Werewolf Fever, I saw an amazing film called Mold, and it was Mold! Exclamation point. So
Mold!
Mold! And then I saw a movie called Slime City Massacre, which is made by a guy here in Buffalo. His name is Greg Lamberson. He's a big supporter of the Blood Sprayer. And he made a movie back in 86 called Slime City. And this was the sequel. And I still have never seen Slime City. I picked it up today because I realized I probably should have seen the original. But, I mean, honestly, it was a standalone film. It was great. Debbie Rochon starred in it. She is a very famous B-movie actress. And I met her in person today. She was amazing. We'll put it this way. After seeing Paranormal Activity 2 and me losing almost all faith in, you know, mainstream modern-day horror, we'll put it that way, I was so disheartened by that. And then I went to this film festival today, and I felt like I could have walked out of a church, like I had just gone through a religious experience. It was that much more enlightening than that crap that I saw on the screen the other night. Wow, that was a pretty good tangent.
Yeah, that was pretty. And you might as well mention that it's is it Buffalo Screams?
Buffalo Screams Film Festival, and there's still another night left of it. I could only go up for today, for Saturday, but yeah, saw some really nice shorts, saw some phenomenal films, and even the bad film that I saw, whose name I won't mention because I don't want to be a jerk right now. I think it put in more effort than Paranormal Activity 2. I really do.
I think that's pretty funny, though, that you're just like, I don't want to be a jerk, because I'm not going to say anything bad about this movie.
Dude, because
Paranormal Activity 2 is the biggest piece of shit ever.
Yeah, because you know what? How much you want to bet that bomb will be number one until next week, when what's the one that's coming out next week that's going to top the chart?
Saw 3D.
If I get in for free, I'll go and see it, but that's the only reason. I still haven't even seen Saw 6, so, I mean, I might miss something. I might not know what's going on.
I heard it. I still haven't seen it either. But,
it's happening.
I actually did that. Anyway. Okay, so we're going to put through the caller here.
I think we've got Alex on the phone, so we'll see what happens here in a minute. We'll get off of that tangent, and we'll see exactly where we go next. But yes, my review of Paranormal Activity 2, don't see it unless you want to cry yourself to sleep at night because you're afraid of what's happening in the future of war.
And my review is, if you didn't like the first one, stay out of the theater.
unless
you
get in
like
for
it,
free, and then
yeah.
It's okay, but then you'll still hate it.
Or if you want to hear ghetto people yell, where the other bitch go? Oh, nigga, she dead! Anyway.
All right. So, we think that right now we may have a guest on the line. Is that true?
Hey, Christy. What's happening?
How are you doing, Alex?
I'm doing good. I enjoyed your Paranormal Activity 2 rant.
It was a rant, wasn't it? God, what a...
yeah,
it's
good,
home.
Though.
Anyways, I've got Jeff here with me as well.
How's it going?
Hey. How's it going?
I'm just on a roll here, that's all. I'm on a rant, so I'm going to calm down from that. But anyways, for those who somehow have no idea who the heck you are, why don't you give a little, 10-second bio on who the heck you are?
You want me to give a bio on who I am?
Yes, I want to hear what you have to say about yourself, because I know you're modest.
Oh, my God. I think I'm going to have an existential crisis. I'm a filmmaker and an actor, and... I do a whole bunch of stuff, and I whittle.
you knit.
Yeah, a little bit of knitting. A lot of people know me from the Bill and Ted movies, Lost Boys movies, and all that stuff. And I also direct movies. I made a movie called Freaked, a psychological thriller called Fever. And I'm working on a remake of The Gate right now.
I think that's what we're going to talk about first. So here's the deal. Let's start from the beginning. How the heck did this happen that you got involved with remaking The Gate, the 1987 movie that starred Stephen Dorff?
Well, the producer of the original, a guy named Andres Hamori, wanted to remake it, and he knew that, you know, in this day and age, that movie with that tone would be a little bit different than it was back in the day, because those movies are really specific to the 80s. So he was looking for somebody who would, you know, get the original, because he loves the original. He's not trying to, eradicate it, but would also be able to modernize it. And, he sort of came to me because I do a lot of effects work, and in TV commercials, I do a lot of stuff with kids, and I'd done these two Ben 10 movies, and so he sort of thought it was an interesting hybrid of having seen Fever, my thriller, which all takes place in one building and is pretty surreal and very, very dark, and having seen Ben 10 and a bunch of other stuff, he thought it was a pretty good hybrid of dark and creepy and, effects-driven and being able to work with kids. So that's definitely what we're doing. You know, that's what this movie is. So that's
and
it.
And how long has it been since you started, since the first word came along? It's been years now, hasn't it, since you started the original idea for this?
Well, yeah. I mean, it usually takes time. There's two things at work. It takes time to put a movie together independently, because this is an independent movie. So was the last one. And that takes time, especially in this economic climate. It's been really a fairly slow process, which we're just coming to the end of now, God willing. But it's also, with an effects movie, especially a 3D movie, that takes a lot of time. So the very first thing I wanted to do, which was about 2 years ago when I first started, was, and I was finishing Ben 10 at that time, the second one, but I sort of got my hands on the draft that they had done. I started to rewrite it. I started to storyboard it. I started to bring in kind of a brain trust of 3D experts, and we all started attacking the script and trying to figure out how to build this thing from the ground up as a kick-ass 3D movie and a good scary ride. So that's taken some time.
Unlike, a lot of other remakes that are being made by big studios, this is completely opposite of that. Like, you guys are doing this on your own for love of the film, really.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll either be punished for our sins by it taking another 2 years to get, done, or, we'll just get cooking and it'll be great. But, I mean, that tends to be how I work. Even when I made Freaked at the studio at Fox, it was still pretty much our baby when Tom and I did that together. And, you know, we very much worked to the beat of our own drum. Fever was completely independent. I built that as a very low-budget independent movie, specifically because I wanted to make something really specific that I knew wasn't terribly commercial, but it was what I wanted. It was a story that I wanted to tell. So, you know, it's a risky way to work. I've had very, very cool projects fall apart on me. But, you know, I believe in a certain amount of autonomy for certain stories. And I think The Gate is an idiosyncratic story. You know, it's like I don't want to turn this into some kind of whitewash modern cheese fest for kids. I'd like to keep a lot of the idiosyncrasies of the original and some of my own idiosyncrasies, obviously, bring those in. And that's just that's an easier thing to do in an independent world than it would be to do through the studios.
Actually, you made a good point right there. You were talking about, you know, you didn't want to make it necessarily a cheese fest for kids. Like, the original Gate was one of the movies that I personally saw when I think I was like 6 or 7 years old at the time, really young, and that's one of the first horror movies that I saw that kind of got me into horror in the first place. So are you kind of trying to keep the tone a little bit like that, or are you going for like an older audience maybe?
No, I'm definitely not going... I'm definitely not going for an older audience. I think that it doesn't mean that I don't want an older audience to like it, because I do. But, you know, the original Gate was PG-13, and it was definitely aimed for a younger audience. It was just really hard-edged, because a lot of movies in those days were hard-edged. But, you know, I know the makers of that movie. I know what they were going for. And, you know, Stephen Dorff, he was 12. I mean, all the protagonists of that movie are really young, and there's no adults around. And, you know, most of the people that I know that love that movie were kids when they saw it. You know, they dig it now in a retro way, but they were kids when they saw it. And, you know, I think that movie has, you know, a specific place in kind of 80s horror lore because it was a genuinely scary movie for kids, which is really, really rare. So I would say, you know, the short answer to your question is I want to make a scary movie for kids, but there's no doubt in my mind who my audience is, and that is fundamentally a younger audience. But, you know, hopefully, and I believe we'll do this, it's going to have enough style and strangeness and imagination to the effects and proficiency to the effects that we get an older audience, too. I want to make a movie that I would want to go see, not just a movie that a 12-year-old is going to want to go see, but, you know, it's not Paranormal Activity. I mean, it isn't going to be, you know... It isn't gonna operate on that level. I mean, it's not gonna be a PG-13 movie that also scares the hell out of 30-year-olds. So that just, it doesn't make any sense. You kind of have to pick one or the other.
For those who are just joining us, Jeff and Christy here with our guest Alex Winter. We're talking about The Gate 3D. One question, a lot of people have been wondering, because I know that you are going to be shooting in Germany. What was sort of, and how did that come about instead of maybe shooting in the U.S. or even in Canada? How did Germany come about?
With every film I make, I demand that I shoot it wherever the Quarrymen first played, and this is the first time anyone's actually let me do it. No, just kidding. Quarrymen was John Lennon's original band. Sorry, it's an incredibly obscure reference. But
We all feel like jerks. Thanks.
the Beatles started in Hamburg. It's really pretty basic. It's a German-Canadian co-production. We are being largely funded by Germany and Canada. We're going to be shooting, and the movie's, you know, a big Canadian movie. It was made in Canada. It was made completely by Canadians, fundamentally, originally. And they love this. They have a big soft spot in their heart. So it's not just Germany. We're shooting in Canada, and we're shooting in Germany, and we're using Canadian people, a lot of Canadian people on our crew, and a lot of Germans on our crew. And that's, you know, fundamentally to do with finance. But I'm building sets. I mean, the whole house is this Rube Goldberg set, because so much devastation happens to this house, and I hate doing that stuff with, like, blue screen and CG. I like to have it happen, you know, in your face and in the actors' faces. So we're building these elaborate sets out of this house, and that's all what's happening in Germany. So it's not like we're trying to fake Germany for the States. Everything that happens in Germany is happening inside a studio.
Are you going to be sticking with mainly unheard of people? Are you going to try to put any names in the film, or do you want to just keep it, you know, as basic as possible, really?
Well, Jerry Lewis turned me down.
Is he going to play the troll? Or?
That's right. He was going to play the dead workman. The nutty professor. The way I cast is I really just look for the best actors. And if they happen to have been in stuff before, and I'm talking specifically about kids, because there is no single 12-year-old kid that can open a movie. I mean, maybe Jaden Smith now since Karate Kid, but he wasn't before Karate Kid. I mean, there basically aren't any 12-year-old stars, zero. So, I just go out and look for the best possible actors I can. I mean, there's older cast in this as well as his older sister. There's a bunch of older teens and younger teens. But my approach isn't to say to the casting director, you know, go get me iCarly. It's go get me some really great actors if they happen to have been in anything. I mean, it isn't really even a bonus. It's just that they happen to have been in stuff, you know. I really, especially for rigorous effects stuff like this, it's like I really look for a whole constellation of stuff because these kids are going to be, you know, they're really going to be put through a lot of paces. So I look for kids that have acting chops, but I also look for kids that I think are going to be able to handle what they're going to go through physically.
I'm sorry. I was trying to get, because I feel like I'm talking too much, and I point to Jeff, and I'm like, hey, do you want to do anything? And he's like, he's so funny.
I can't think of anything right off the top of my head.
Jeff hasn't done as many interviews. Unfortunately, I'm far too versed in this. So let me keep going on a roll here. So so anyways, as far as the gate, I know, you know, we've talked about the fact that you want to make it a film for both kids and adults. And this is something I know a few weeks ago when you and I spoke for the first time, I said to you, okay, so you're doing a remake. Horror purists are fundamentally against remakes. What is really your sort of response to that? Because I know, you know, you want to... never mind. I'm going to let you answer it. I'm not even going to infer as to what you're going to say.
I only have four words to answer to the horror enthusiast who hates remakes, and that's John Carpenter's The Thing. I don't have anything else to say. I mean, I literally don't have any. How could a horror purist hate remakes when, in my view, the greatest modern horror film ever made, bar none, is a remake? I don't really know what else to say. I don't understand the issue with remakes because my favorite horror movie is a remake. And horror by nature has pretty much always been remakes, going back to James Whale and Frankenstein and Dracula, Todd Browning, and all of those were, you know, made over and over and over and over again, even back in those days. I think that, you know, the notion of people sitting around, you know, which is what a horror movie is, the notion of people sitting around a campfire telling scary stories to each other is, you know, it starts with that kind of oral history of repetition. I mean, I just think horror by its nature is ripe for remake. So I'm so the wrong guy to ask because I think that horror, almost more than any genre, is inherently workable as far as remakes go. I mean, the idea of The Gate, you know, I only got to look at what I'm doing, which is the idea of a bunch of kids in a house with no adults around who unwittingly open a portal to hell in their backyard is a really primordial, basic idea. It's not 2001. It's not this really overtly complicated, intellectual, abstract idea, like how could I remake 2001? It's basically a campfire ghost story. I think you could make 90 The Gates, you know, but I'm looking forward to making, you know, a really good one. So
one thing that you have to say, or else you're really going to upset me, you have to make sure the kid who plays Terry is still an uber nerd. He has to be a total dweeb because I don't know if I can handle it if he's not. That's just me.
Yeah. I mean, there's certain templates that they got right. In the first one, I mean, look, there's a lot of that movie that I love, but in terms of what I can utilize in a remake that's going to make sense in a modernization, there's certain things that they did that I'm definitely keeping because they're not broken, so I don't intend to fix them, and they also can modernize really easily. And that's just fun for people who like the original. But then there's a lot of other stuff that I don't think modernizes as well, and that's the stuff that I got in. And also, I'm really kind of a stickler for like a really strong emotional arc for the main character, so I've something that I've been working on as well, which differs from the original.
I won't ask too much about it, but I am curious just to see. Because I'm not going to get into that now. I'm not going to ask you to, you know, I'm not going to ask you to force your hand or anything like that. But I'm just very interested to see some of these little tweaks here and there, how that changes. You've got me excited about a remake, Alex. Congratulations.
Come on, there's a lot of good remakes. I mean, there's a lot of crappy remakes, but I always tell people there's a lot of crappy movies, period. So, I mean, you know, the focus on, I do respect the fact, because I'm an audience member just like anybody else, I do respect the fact that right now, because of the economy, Hollywood is churning out an enormous amount of remakes, and they're churning out an enormous amount of just, you know, branded entertainment as opposed to rolling the dice on more original ideas. You know, I'm as exhausted by that as anybody. I don't see it as much of an issue, I get, you know, in terms of like horror or the sacrosanct nature of some original horror movie from 87, but I certainly feel the weight of, you know, how unoriginal and how, you know, branded the industry is right now. But that's just the economy, and every time in the history of the entertainment industry there's been a bad economy, that's what they always do. So it's not surprising, it's just kind of a bummer.
So just out of curiosity, if somebody comes to you, you know, after the gate's over, you know, maybe you're ready for another project, and they say to you, hey, do you want to make a remake to Friday the 13th Part 2? Is that something that you could possibly be interested in taking on, or are you more, you know, you want to just take something a little bit fresh and put a new spin on it, or do you think you could ever find yourself?
No. I mean, there's no doubt that when Andres first came to me and said he was making a remake, I was wary. There's no doubt. But when he told me what it was, and I went back and watched The Gate again because I hadn't seen it since the late 80s, I really fundamentally felt like this would be an absolutely kick-ass modern movie. I mean, I definitely do not feel that every one of these horror movies needs to be dragged out because, you know, it's the reason that I mentioned the Carpenter movie is that I think it's imperative for the filmmaker to take a property that they absolutely do love, you know, some aspect of, and make something that's completely their own. And that's why I love Carpenter's The Thing. I'm making The Gate is completely my own. It's based more on my own childhood fears, not so much the writer of the originals. And I'm embedding it with a lot more sort of, you know, the dream stuff and the phantasmagoric stuff is coming more out of my head than just regurgitating something from the original or trying to make, you know, some crappy teen fest cynical rehash movie. And I mean, that's the only difference. I think that, you know, the beauty of this film being independent, while it makes it harder for us to get it, you know, to get moving as quickly as we would like to get moving, is that it's a filmmaker piece. I mean, that's what we're doing. You know, we're not making a slick piece of kind of merchandise that's got some old brand slapped on it. So that's the upside.
Once again, for those just joining us, we do have Alex Winter as a guest on Blood Spirit Podcast this week. We're talking about The Gate. Is there anything else about The Gate you want to bring up, Jeff, or are you good? Okay.
I'm imagining this guy curled up in the corner like asleep with drool coming out of his mouth.
No, you know, to be honest, it's just I'm like really just listening to everything Jeff say about it because Christy's actually asking a lot of the same questions that I had, which is... Like I said, it's when I first heard about the project in general, and I heard that you were attached to it, I was all about it just because I've seen a lot of the other stuff that you've done. I've seen Freaked, like great, one of my favorite movies. I saw Fever, and I thought that was great. And so when I heard that you were attached to it, I was just like, you know, this has got to be one of the better remakes.
Let me toot your own horn, Jeff. Jeff actually owns Fever on DVD, Alex. I want you to know this.
Awesome. Yeah, the DVD looks really nice, actually. The color time on that looks better than the print, which is kind of unheard of. I mean, you know, what would you guys say is the worst, other than the shot-for-shot remake of Psycho, which was just a horrendous idea to begin with, what would you say the worst horror remake is of, like, this modern era?
That's really hard to say because there, unfortunately, are a lot that are just worthless pieces of garbage. It's easier to say what ones are good. Like, we actually,
right.
this was our topic last podcast, and we named John Carpenter's The Thing, Cronenberg's The Fly was another great one.
Yep.
What else? Let Me In, which was more recent. That one was great. What else did we say?
I really like The Blob from '88.
Oh.
Like, I don't think it necessarily was better than the original or anything, but I thought it captured the feeling and modernized it. And that's another thing is, you know, when you take a movie that's older and you remake it, if enough time has passed, sometimes it can really be good
mm-hmm.
because you can do things effects-wise that you couldn't do back then.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, I think it's easier to almost say these are the remakes that were good and actually, you know, benefited the original or made the original, you know, more beloved in a way. And
right.
It's just unfortunately, you know, when you get big studios behind a remake, it's more about lining their pockets than playing to the fans. I mean, no offense to Platinum Dunes, but hey, that's kind of what they do. They screw over the fans to make a little bit more money. You don't have to agree with that. That's just my opinion.
I mean, to be honest with you, I haven't seen probably any of the Platinum Dunes remakes because I'm old enough that I'm not going to go running to a new Freddy movie, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just not. I mean, the idea of Freddy being, it's so, I mean, that's the sort of the thing that I did go through with The Gate is, and I would say this goes for pretty much all of the horror remakes, though I kind of think you can make Dracula and Frankenstein over and over and over again, even though the personalities that drove those originals are unbelievably indelible, Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi. But, you know, when you have these movies like Freddy, it's so personality-driven. I mean, you have him in your head, you know, Robert Englund in your head to such a degree. It's like, you'd be like making Clockwork Orange without Malcolm McDowell. You know, it just doesn't, there isn't a movie there. I mean, I've kind of argued this about Bill and Ted when they've talked about Bill and Ted remakes without me and Reeves. I've just been like, there isn't anything there. I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, it's that's part of the problem that I have with going to those remakes. I'm just like, well, those movies specifically to me were inherently personality driven. Without that personality, I'm just not that interested in seeing it. So I wouldn't really argue that The Gate is that way. I mean, I'd say that the personality that drives The Gate, you know, that's got in terms of having – the most resonance are the Minions, and God knows we're going to have plenty of those.
That's great.
Well, I mean, it's funny. You kind of brought up something that we promised ourselves that we would ask before we let you go. So here's the question: we've heard rumors that Keanu is interested in doing a Bill and Ted's Part 2. Do you know anything about
three.
This? Is this true?
It would be part 3.
Oh, you part 3. Whatever. You know what?
Yeah.
I'm a jerk. I didn't really like Bogus Journey. I'm sorry. Excellent Adventure is always just, that's all that exists to me. I'm a jerk. Anyways, go ahead. Hung up. He's like,
I can't really comment. I mean, it's, you know, it's everything got out into the press, so it's kind of out there. You know, it's, we'll see. There's a possibility, but it isn't by any means definitive. I'm not being coy. I mean, it's something that we've kicked around. It's something that we are looking into, but it doesn't by any means guarantee it'll ever happen. It's just something that we're kind of examining. So, because like we're getting to an age where like if we're ever going to do it, we all better have a look at a possible story or there's really going to be no way or no point. So we're kind of examining it. Whether that translates into an actual movie is way too early to know.
That's
the absolute truth. So, you know, we'll see.
You swear.
that's the truth. I mean, that's it. There's, you know, whoever was out there who owns the rights to Bill and Ted right now is nodding their head going, yeah, sure, there'll be another Bill and Ted if I decide there will be. I mean, we don't own the rights. We can't just go make one just because we want to. It's a whole process.
True.
So, you know,
I guess
so we're we could just pick up a Hi-8 camera and, you know, and then change the names to Fred and Bob or something. But, so we're nosing around.
I guess it's just a situation
here.
Where, I mean, even though, of course, I'm a huge nerd, I would love to see it. I don't understand what, I mean, like, I can't imagine what happened to Bill and Ted after the last couple of years of high school.
That's
like, I don't
the whole,
see.
That's the beauty of comedy.
Like, I can't imagine.
A lot of things could go horribly, horribly wrong. So I'll leave it at that.
Oh, man. Okay. Alex, is there anything else you want to say about The Gate? Do you know exactly when you guys are going over to start shooting on this or what's happening?
I'm supposed to start shooting in February. We're just sort of bashing away at it. It takes time, and hopefully we won't get stalled out. You know, it's a lot of movies, as I'm sure you guys know, keep starting and stopping right now because of the market is just so bananas. Hopefully we won't get stopped, and assuming we don't get stopped, then I'll be shooting it in the late winter, a beautiful time to be in Germany. It'll come out, if we stay on schedule, it'll be out a little over a year from now. So back
I do actually have another question, though.
Whoa, wait a minute. No, go ahead.
Well,
he woke up. Jeff's awake.
We've, of course, mentioned that the film is being shot for 3D. Now, there's been a lot of talk about 3D recently just because, you know, obviously since Avatar happened, it's like a lot of the studios are going and doing, like, 3D post stuff, which is kind of controversial. So there's been a lot of people speaking out about, you know, is 3D good, is it not? But I'm just curious about how the 3D came into the picture as far as the gate goes. Like, is that something, like, that you guys had thought of, like, when you were coming up with that, or was it somewhere during the process something happened where you were like, you know, this might be a good thing to add into it?
I'll give you my really short response, because I'm such a blabbermouth about 3D, I could give you a whole podcast on that. But 3D was my idea, and it's been incredibly complicated, especially as an independent movie, since I decided to go that route. But I'm a huge proponent of 3D for the right movie, and I just firmly believe that The Gate is the right movie. One of my reasons for wanting to do it was because it's so atmospheric. From a cinematic standpoint, the idea of a whole movie that takes place in a house where things just get progressively worse and worse and worse, kind of like Robert Wise's The Haunting, which I keep referencing, but it's one of my favorite, all-time favorite horror movies. I just think it's absolutely suited to 3D, because 3D works best, in my opinion, when it's atmospheric, where, you know, you're being brought into the environment as opposed to the environment being brought out into you in the movie theater. That's crappy 3D, in my opinion. You know, good 3D takes you and immerses you in a world. And I just love the idea of immersing people in this. It's a haunted house movie. At the end of the day, it's basically what the original Gate was, too, was a haunted house movie. And it was like your suburban house is a war zone. And that's what we're doing. I just think it's really suited to 3D. Do I think every movie is? No, of course not. Do I think that Hollywood has gone bananas because they're so scared of piracy and they want to charge people $40 for, you know, a movie that's worth 5 cents? Then, you know, no, I don't think that's good either. It burns my butt, just like it burns everyone else's butt to go see a movie that you know, is going to cost me $25 and I got to wear glasses and it didn't need to be 3D, you know. But I'm not worried about that. From a cinematic standpoint, I think this movie will be absolutely awesome in 3D. And, you know, in terms of the design of it and stuff, I've been building it in 3D from the get-go. So I think it'll look pretty good.
Yeah,
it certainly won't be a bunch of crap just hurling at the screen, you know.
No, that's definitely one of the things is I obviously have no idea what goes in on a technical aspect on that, but I imagine it has to be pretty rough actually figuring out how to do everything with the 3D technology. The biggest thing that I hear people complain about is the post 3D stuff where they just take a movie and slap it on, because obviously you can't really do that and still get the same effect that you would get if you're filming it for that and you have reason for that. So I was glad.
There's no way. I mean, there's absolutely no way. I mean, I feel really, really bad for the filmmakers, and that's what's, you know, you get this lucky break of you're going to make some, you know, $100 million tentpole movie, and then you lock your – this would happen on two or three different live-action movies that I know of personally. And they went all the way through to picture lock. They finished their effects. Everything's done. Sound's done. Picture's done. And then they decide to convert. And you're just screwed. I mean, there's no way to do that and have it look like anything other than a crushing headache, which, of course, those movies did. And we don't need to name them because we all know what they are. But, you know, they look terrible, and they cause you physical pain. And I feel really bad for the directors on those. But, you know, to be fair to the studios, there's a learning curve. And, yeah, they jumped on the bandwagon too fast, but they're playing catch-up. And I think we're going to see a lot. You know, look what Harry Potter did. I thought that was pretty noble. You know, they were gonna post convert the latest Deathly Hallows or whatever the latest Harry Potter is, and they did all this R&D and they were, you know, advertised as they were gonna be 3D, and then they pulled it. They just said they're just gonna release it 2D because they don't have the time to make it look good enough. So they're getting it. You know, I don't think they want to just make crud. So I think that even their stuff, even the fast stuff, is gonna start getting better and less fast. You know, I think we'll probably still see more movies in 3D than we need. I mean, that's my personal opinion. we're going to still see more stuff in 3D than we really need to see in 3D. But at least it'll look better.
Well, we definitely want to thank you for coming on our show, and definitely stay in touch. And when you're all done, we would love to have you back.
Great. Great. Then you can tell me whether I made a piece of shit remake 3D or whether it's watchable. It's your call.
Well, here's the thing. Like I told you from the start, when I first started hounding you about talking about this remake, I have the utmost faith in you because of Freaked. Like, absolutely. But if it sucks, I'll still be honest with you and I'll tell you, Alex, that really blew. But I
You know what? I'll apologize. You know, then we'll move on to the next one. That'll work. Then I'll move on to Freddy versus Jason versus Predator.
No, I like I said, I have absolute faith in you. I'll still be honest if I don't like it, but I have faith, so don't let me down. I'm kidding, it was a joke.
Yeah.
Anyway. So
all right,
thank you again for coming on, and yeah, best of luck with everything, sir.
Yeah, seriously.
Cool. Talk to you later.
Kid. Bye.
Bye.
What time is it?
I have about 15 minutes left.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, we did really good.
Yeah.
Can't believe I shut me up. So for those who just caught the tail end of that, that was Alex Winter talking about The Gate 3D and about the rumors about a, not a sequel, the third in a Bill and Ted's series. I forgot about Bogus Journey because I just didn't like it as much. Like, I love William Sadler, and of course I love Bill and Ted. But I forgot all about it. I don't even own that one on DVD.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I saw that. I remember seeing that one in the movie theater and just being, like, completely... When I was, like, 8 years old or whatever I was, I think I was 8 or 9, because I was, like, 88 or 89.
Yeah.
And, like, I just remember thinking, like, that it was great, it was awesome. And then I remember watching it again when I was in, like, my teenage years and maybe not being so hot on it. But I've gone back and watched it. You know, a couple of years ago, and I actually kind of enjoyed it a little bit more just because it was just so ridiculous.
See, like, I think I love Bill and Ted so much, not only because I'm, like, a history nerd. I just think that film is so pitch perfect. Don't make fun of me for saying this, but it's almost a perfect film, really. Like, it really is. It's so well written. I love the dialogue. I love the way it's acted. And I love the characters that were pulled from the future. From the past. From the future. Jesus Christ, I need to go to bed. It's been a long weekend. It's been a long week. I have not recovered since I got back from Rock and Shock. Anyways, so if you missed the beginning of Alex, you can go ahead and download this episode. You can start from the beginning, as you can with all of our episodes. This is episode number 3. Now, we said this was the Halloween episode, so maybe we should talk about our Halloween plans a little.
Yeah, I mean, because basically next weekend's Halloween. I know there's a film festival out here in Rochester that's
yes,
going on that I believe you're involved with a little bit.
I am, but now it sounds so cheesy.
I believe there's a film festival going on. No, but there is a, was it the 25
yep.
or 24 hour?
The 24 hour horror fest. It takes place at the Little Theater here in Rochester. And if you want information, you can go to thelittle.org. There's a link right on the front page about the 24 hour horror fest. Kind of cool. It starts out at about 10:30 at night at a coffee shop called Java's with a zombie walk. And this is where a bunch of people get together and look like zombies, and then they walk. Get it?
Imagine that.
I know. I like how they keep everything pretty basic. Kind of like the 24-hour horror fest. What is it? It's a horror fest that lasts 24 hours.
Although I was kind of thinking about it, and it actually lasts more than 24 hours.
Shh.
It's like 26.
Shh. Not the point. Anyway. Anyways, so I'll just...
More
I'll
for your money.
I'll run down really quick the movies that are going to be playing, in case anybody out there is interested, because Rochester, for most of the East Coast, it's not that bad of a drive. It's a few hours, and Rochester is an amazing city in general. I don't just say that because I live here. I've moved away and came back because I loved it so much. But we're starting the 24-hour horror fest off with Shaun of the Dead, and we actually have a 35mm print of that. We're moving on to Dead Alive, then we're going to Return of the Living Dead. There's some other stuff in between. There's going to be what they're calling the Survivor's Choice. So whoever's left over after Return of the Living Dead gets to choose what the fourth film is. I don't know who it is. Anyways, and after that, there's going to be like a kids movie at 10 for parents who want to bring their kids in. It's going to be Igor, or Igor if they're calling it, I don't know, with John Cusack. After that, there is a horror film shorts. Last 2 hours. The first hour is mainly for, you know, New York people. Second hour is for out-of-state people. Then the crazy night begins. At 4 o'clock, do an American movie, which is, have you seen American movie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. A documentary about a independent filmmaker named Mark Borkhart, who is struggling to make his horror film Coven. It's not Coven. It's Coven.
You guys are actually showing Coven, too.
Yeah,
right?
We are. We're showing Coven right after American movie. After that,
Mark Borchardt.
I know, right? After that, we have Romero's Diary of the Dead, followed by Dark Knight of the Scarecrow. Now, as far as I have been informed, it's not the first time it's been shown like in a public place, but it's the first time it's been shown on the big screen in a theater. It's a made-for-TV film, stars Larry Drake of Darkman fame, and J.D. Feigelson, who wrote it, actually was nice enough to record an introduction for us for that, which is really sweet. After Dark Knight of the Scarecrow, we have the theatrical Grindhouse, meaning it's not the extended versions. It's the same thing you saw in the theater with the fake trailers. And for that, we actually have a recorded introduction from Zoe Bell, specifically for the 24-Hour Horror Fest. And then the coup de grace is our midnight movie on Saturday night, which is... Human Centrifuge. No, the Human Centrifuge. I keep calling it that lately for some reason.
Human Centrifuge.
Yeah, I don't know why.
That sounds like something that like Asylum would put out.
Yeah.
Like to try, because you know how they always do that. Like they had like Piranha, and then there's like Mega Piranha.
Yeah.
And then they had my favorite though is when Sherlock Holmes came out, and the Asylum put out The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, and the front cover has a freaking Tyrannosaurus Rex, a giant like sea creature like attacking like the London Bridge, and there's a fire-breathing dragon on the cover. Like, I don't know how Robert Downey Jr. and whoever was else was in that movie could top that. And I haven't even watched it, and the reason is because the picture I get in my head from looking at that cover is just so amazing that I don't think it can ever live up to
it. I don't think it will.
Anyway.
No. I mean, that's pretty much it. I was lucky enough to get to sit with George Romero for a little bit last weekend and got some instructions from him. He actually did a nice personalized introduction for Shaun of the Dead and his film, Diary. It was kind of funny. I hope I'm like everybody else. I really did not like Diary of the Dead that much at all. And George did a very short, like, 10-second introduction to Diary of the Dead. Then he spent, like, a whole half a minute on Shaun of the Dead just saying, you know, Edgar Wright, a great friend of mine, and, you know, saying all this really nice stuff about Shaun of the Dead. I mean, and rightfully so. I mean, it's completely based on Romero films. There's so many nods to him in that film. And it's all based on his work, really. Shaun of the Dead, great film. I love it. But once again, that starts next Friday night at midnight. So, you know, you stay up all day Friday, and then at midnight, Shaun of the Dead starts, takes you through 24 hours. Like I said, if you want more info, thelittle.org. I will be there practically for the whole 24 hours. Jeff will be there for most of it. Definitely most of it, if not all of it. I should force him there. I should cuff him to a chair, make him stay with me the whole time.
I got to try and get some sleep, though, in there, because like I'm really excited for Dark Knight of Scarecrow. And I don't want to be, like, falling asleep during that. So I'm probably going to skip the kids feature and some of that in there. But I have to go for the evening part because I have to see, like, I can't pass up the chance to see Dead Alive in a theater, like, if for no other reason. And Return of the Living Dead, like, you know, I mean, that one's a little bit more common. But Dead Alive is, like, you know, how often do you ever hear about that screening?
Yeah, and I don't know if I had mentioned this to you, because I know I've explained this to other people, but last year, the person who was sort of running the program that we were working with tried to cut a lot of corners by only doing DVD projections of most everything, and it cut some money, but nothing looked that amazing. But this year, we're only doing either 35mm print. If we couldn't get a print, then we're doing Blu-ray projection. So no matter what, it's going to look really good, amazing quality, and like you can get a pass to see all the movies. I think it's about $50, plus you get a limited edition T-shirt of the event, which is drawn by Jeff Zorno, who does a lot of Fright Rag shirts. It's the company I work for. I'm not trying to pimp it. I'm just stating a fact. And you get into all the movies. There's all this other stuff. But if you only want to go to certain movies, it's only $5 to get into each movie, and it's completely worth it. I mean, even if I weren't involved with it, I would be going just to. I mean, when are you going to see a triple feature of Shaun of the Dead, Dead Alive, Return of the Living Dead? You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. Even if you don't go for the whole thing, it's still.
Oh yeah.
It's still a good time. You know, I mean, I've already I just saw Human Centipede in Toronto, in August in the theater, and it's a pretty different experience than I would imagine it being watching at home.
Yeah.
I think that the people that, because I've heard a lot of people complain about, oh, well, it was supposed to be this, and I was so let down, blah, blah. But I don't think they ever saw it in a theater full of people who are laughing their asses off at the movie. Because it is more of an absurd comedy than it is, like, a horror movie.
That's what's so great about it. It's played so straight. That's what makes it funny, at least for me. That's what makes it kind of be funny.
Dieter Laser is just like, what the hell?
His name is awesome.
I thought it was, it sounds like a porn star or something, though.
Dieter Laser.
I was just like, oh, my God. And so I'm actually, I don't know if you saw the teasers that are out there that Tom Six did for the Human Centipede final sequence. Is that what it's called?
Full sequence. 12 people ass to mouth.
I just love him walking around with that cowboy hat on. It's kind of creepy.
I think my original review of the Human Centipede, before I really watched it a few times and grew to love it, was I would rather have my face ripped off than be stitched to some guy's asshole so he could shit down my throat. You can quote me on that, Tom Six.
Yeah, they should put that on the front of the DVD cover for the next one.
Yeah. The funny thing is, God, I wish. The funny thing is, Pieces, the first time I watched it at home by myself, didn't even watch through 15 minutes because I just didn't enjoy it. But then I saw it in a theater full of people. I fell in love with it because it's just a different atmosphere. You appreciate it for the hilarity. And then, Human Centipede, I can't wait to see it on a big screen. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, and that really is something. The theater experience is something that I feel like we're getting more and more away from lately and especially, people that are like, oh, I'm not going to go to the theater, I'm just going to download it or whatever. I'm not going to get into that topic because you could talk for hours on that whole thing, but, I've seen a lot of movies in theaters that I was lucky to see, like Trick or Treat is one of them that comes to mind right away, and that is just something where, even though it's great to watch it at home, you still can't compare to just being in a theater with a rowdy audience that is there, and I was at that movie in the most terrible circumstances because there was a tornado that went through Toronto, believe it or not.
That's right.
And it knocked the power out, so it's 90 degrees, everyone's sweating, the whole theater smells like BO, and I still loved the movie. I still had a great time at the movie, so that tells you how much fun it is to see it with a crowd, and it's one of those things that's you can't pass it up, and that's kind of how I feel about a lot of the movies that are going to be playing there. It's got to see them in a theater. There's going to be people there, and not only just people, but people who are actually fans.
Yeah.
So it's not just going to be a bunch of people from the hood that are there because they want to have their ass scared off.
Paranormal Activity shit.
Yeah, pretty much.
Number two. Paranormal Activity number two, literally. That's my quote. Can I get that on the DVD box? I don't think I ever put bad quotes on the cover unless it's a joke. I don't get it.
It's funny because I actually had a quote that was used in the Birdemic trailer.
Yeah.
And but it's really funny because the quote that it came from was me saying this movie is so terrible that you have to see it to believe it. And they put you have to see it to believe it on the box. So it just really shows you. But in defense of it, it's terrible in a good way, so it does work. But
yeah,
it's funny how they get quotes.
No, it is. How much more time do we have?
Oh, we're about done.
Okay.
So, we're going to be back in another 2 weeks. So we'll be back the weekend after Halloween, which I think is, or not the, yeah, the weekend after Halloween. So I think that's the 6th.
Yeah. But everybody have a happy Halloween. I'm Christy.
I'm Jeff. And remember to check your candy. Don't blow out any jack-o'-lanterns.
And visit bloodsprayer.com. Have a good Halloween. And thanks for tuning in and hearing Alex Winter, the man, the myth.
n'est pas un bleu.